Hello there. Thanks for joining me with the podcast today. We've had another event in our country, and we've had a school shooting. So that's my topic today. Now, you've heard on the news, on the television, on the radio, internet, endless dialogue, and endless theories, and endless discussion on this particular school shooting of Nicholas Cruz. Now, we need to take a look at this somewhat systematically and thoroughly. And in the news, you just get a little snippets of it and conjecture. And most of the people discussing the idea of school shootings really know very little about it. So they kind of get a little snippet and kind of make their comment. There's one man in our country that is knowledgeable on school shooting. And this is the expert in our country. His name is Peter Langman. Peter Langman, L-A-N-G-M-A-N. Now, if you want to know anything about it, he's the man to consult. If you're in law enforcement, if you're a school authority, if you're dealing with this issue, he's the man to consult. Now, he has a website, and you can go to it. It's called schoolshootings.information. Schoolshootings.information. Or you can just get his name directly, just Google his name, Dr. Peter Langman, L-A-N-G-M-A-N. Now, that's the man, that's the guru, that's the man to consult. And I've read some of his work, and I'm aware of some of his research and some of his discussions and some of his work. So I'm going to share a little bit with you, a little bit today. But I'll take a little different tack than what you're going to find on most news stations about this matter. Now, that's Nicholas Cruz. We have a young man. The incident just happened like this. He was expelled from school. He was a student and had some problems at the school. And not just one, but multiple over time. Finally, the school had it. Finally, the school came to its conclusion that this young gentleman was not fit to be on campus and was not prepared to undertake academic studies. So because of his behavioral patterns and so on, attitudes and so on, he was expelled. And then proceeded to hold a grudge against the school, against certain teachers, and perhaps against certain students. But live with a grudge. And at some point became provoked. And then we have the school shooting. Now that's kind of the overall summary of it. You can fill in the details. But here's some of my concerns and some of the issues that we need to keep into consideration. First of all, this is rare. School shootings are rare. I mean, it's a big deal. And it happens. It hits the news, and it's a huge event in our country. But it really is somewhat rare. It happens about 1 out of 20 million people in our country. Now, we're a country of about 300 million. So it's not particularly a frequent occurrence, and is certainly not one that involves a lot of people. But when it does happen, it's an enormous event, and it's a disastrous event, a traumatic event for those people involved. Now, since 1966, if we go all the way back in our following of these kinds of shootings, our research shows that there has been an increase. We've had increases in the last number of years. So there's been a kind of a steady increase since 1966. So, in other words, it's a matter that doesn't involve a lot of people, doesn't happen too often, but it's happening more often than has been the place in history. Now, why is that? What's going on in our country? What's going on in the world? What's generating this resentment and this bitterness and this hatred and this fear and this depression and this sadness and this feeling of revenge and attack and out to get you kind of attitude that's within our country, not just within the school shooting people and in individuals involved, but this is across the professions and across the country and across our world. We're seeing increased levels of this kind of antagonism and anger and bitterness and resentment. Bully behavior, for instance, is on the increase you know, as well. So we are a nation of violence, or increased violence than has ever been the case in the past. And we need to really get a hold of that. So I don't think it's an issue of really race in our country, although that's a factor. But it's really a factor of the bitterness within. And that puts us at odds with one another. And then you add race and you add economic levels and you add education levels and you add a lot of other factors to that. And you have a brewing pot of anger and a brewing pot of revenge and a brewing pot of violence that's about ready to explode at any moment. Now, here there are some ideas of myth. And I discussed this kind of discussion and this topic and this myth a little bit more thoroughly on November the 9th, 2017. I did a podcast on school shooting. So if you're really interested in this topic, go backwards in my archives to November the 9th, 2017. There's a podcast, 20-minute podcast on school shootings. And in that, I talk about some of the myths. In other words, these school shooters are not the kid who bullies and not the kid who was bullied, necessarily, although it does happen. But that's not the defining event. These are not kids that have a long criminal history, although some of them do. This is not particularly the defining factor, that they are just juvenile delinquents and this is just one more crime that they commit. And that's not necessarily the case at all. It is true that most of them are men, boys, 95%. Although girls shoot as well. But the majority of them, of course, is male. And then, what about the effect that this is a lonely kid? Well, lonely kids don't necessarily shoot. So, that's a myth. It's not necessarily, although many of these kids are lonely, but they're not decidedly lonely. This is not the major element. These are just myths. We kind of tend to think about those characteristics or those traits as the traits that set off a person to be a shooter. Well, there are some factors that do play a role. We call them personality factors or character traits, whatever you want to call them. And we think of it this way. What about the psychopath? The kid that has no right or wrong. The kid that has no knowledge about what is really the right thing to do under a given situation. Excuse me. That's a kind of a psychopath. One that has no guilt, no shame for what he does or what he thinks or how he behaves or how he feels, how he acts towards others. That's a psychopath. Does wrong but doesn't have any guilt about it, doesn't have any shame about it, doesn't have any anxiety over doing wrong behavior. Well, many of these kids are psychopathic, but not all of them. Some of them are. What about the psychotic? Person who doesn't know reality, can't sort out one factor from another and what is real and what is unreal. Well, some of these kids are, but most of them are not, you know, psychotic. So what about the kid who is traumatized? You know, just really lived under an enormous amount of stress and just going through one trauma after another. And the stress levels of his life are just way out of control. Well, these kids tend to be in that category. In other words, something has recently happened in their life. Their life has recently been turned upside down. The apple cart's just been spilled. You know, their life has just been devastated in some kind of way. That's more likely to have been the case with most of these school shooters. And it appears to be the case with our young gentleman here, Nicholas Cruz. Does tend to be a kind of a traumatized, you know, kid. Both parents have died on him. Left him. He's being cared for by a person of interest, a person who is interested in him, gave him a room to live in, but didn't assume much responsibility or care for him. So he was basically a man who had a room to rent and took this kid in and gave him a place to live without parents. Now that's trauma, to have to live alone without any kind of a natural support system such as parents and grandparents and extended family members, you know, and so on. So in a lot of ways, he's a rejected kid. In a lot of kids, he's a lonely kid. In a lot of ways, he's a kid who is in despair and it feels defeated and feels hopeless, and the world ahead of him is hopeless, and he's got a lot of helplessness feelings, you see. That's the kind of kid that doesn't necessarily shoot, but it's a kid who's at risk for some kind of behavior like this. Could do other kind of things, you know, as well. They aren't necessarily the school shooters, but they do get into this kind of behavior in which they attack and approach people in a violent manner. So that's just kind of the background. Now, my real question is this. Who's at fault here? On the news, you hear all kinds of things. This is the fault of the guns. You know, if we didn't have guns, we wouldn't have this matter. Well, that's nonsense. That's not true at all. The fact that we have fewer guns is more likely to make these kind of things happen. More guns would have reduced this potential for happening. So it isn't the gun itself. You know, the fact that we have a gun, and this kid had a gun. True. He used it. That's true. And but he hadn't gone, he had used another type of gun, or he used some other kind of weapon, or he had done something else, you know, to vent himself and to take out that anger and that revenge that he had, you know, against this particular school and the personnel and the teachers and the students from which he had been expelled. So, you know, yeah, I can look at the issue of guns, but, you know, this would have happened whether we have gun laws or not. And it certainly would have happened more likely if we have no guns or we have few guns around. So the research is very clear on that. Take away guns and our world becomes less safe. Okay? Now, besides the guns, what about the fact of teachers? What responsibility does the teachers have for fault? Did they know this kid very well? Did any of these teachers reach out to him? Did any of these teachers really take him in and said, you know, you're a lonely kid and you're a traumatized kid. We need to love you, and we need to care for you, and we need to support you and be part of your life. Did any teachers really reach out to this kid and take him under their wing? And teachers are not known for that in high school. So I'm wondering if that was the case, or was that missed? Was that a missed opportunity? And if teachers didn't do that, then there's a certain amount of fault there, because this was a kid that was needy. It's a kid who needed support and love and encouragement from others, particularly adults. The fact that his parents died. What did the school do? How did the school step in and become the substitute parent for this kid? Provide a kind of a parenting relationship, you know, for this kid. Who did it? School principals, school teachers, school psychologists, school counselors, all the various vice principals and so on. Did anybody in this school really love this kid and take this kid in? Well, we don't know that. We haven't heard much about that. But when you look at the issue of fault, you got to look at that element of it in terms of the administrative responsibility of the school for this particular kid who was traumatized and going through trauma. Did they hook him up with counseling in the community? Did they try to do things that would have moderated this kid's emotional state? Okay, what about peers? Peers take some responsibility. What peers were really afraid of him, and did they speak up? What peer really knew him? Did that peer really speak up? Did any of his friends, did any of his classmates really reach out to him and become part of his life or try to relate to him and try to take away some of his pain and give him a little bit of hope? Was there a Christian campus club there, and did they reach out, you know, to him? Schools have those kind of clubs. What was the relationship between this kid and the Christian witness and the Christian churches in that community, but particularly the Christian clubs on campus? So that's an element you have to take a look at in terms of some responsibility, you know, for this kind of behavior. Now, we know he didn't have parents, but we don't know about grandparents and relatives and care providers down the road. But this is a kid that was alone, cared for himself. So we have a whole level of responsibility. Even when the parents died, what did they do beforehand to prepare him to live alone? What did they do to connect him with people who could be of help to him after they died? I mean, what responsibility did these parents really have for this kid's stability after their death? Let's look at that. What about neighbors? What neighbors knew this kid? What neighbors were concerned about him? What neighbors tried to reach out to him? What neighbors loved him? What neighbors ignored him? What neighbors shunned him? What neighbors just ignored him totally and let him be, even though they knew that he was a kid who was hurting and living alone and had deep, deep depression. You say, what about neighbors? What's the responsibility there? I think there is a responsibility on the part of neighbors. We're a community. You see? What about the idea, what about the school policy? You know, they expel them from school. They just kick them out. But does a school have a policy that when you expel a student, that there's an ongoing responsibility that you have for that kid to make sure that he adjusts to now being out of school? Do they hook him up with a treatment possibility? They refer him to the mental health center. Did they get him hooked up with some counselor, some psychologist in the community that could take him and work with him and develop him a little bit? What's the responsibility of the school there? They just expel him and then that's the end of it? That the school arm is only so long and that's it? Or was there somebody in the school that kind of cared for this kid after the expulsion? Did the school psychologist take some initiative and some leadership in the area of making sure this kid was cared for and was treated and was protected after the expulsion? We don't know that, do we? What about the whole issue of the school being aware of the risk level that this kid presented while he was a student and then after he was a student? See, I advocate in schools, particularly high schools, a risk management task force. A risk management task force. What that is, it's a task force that meets several times a year. And they assess the level of risk within the school, and they assess the level of risk outside of the school that the school could be placed at risk if those factors outside the school acted, like in the case of this particular kid. A risk management task force would be, obviously, teachers, it would obviously be administrators, and students and community representatives and part of the judicial system of the community, police force and so on. But there would be a task force of about 6 to 12 people that would meet about every 3 months and just took an updated risk level of that particular school and who places that school at risk, and then to monitor that person or to that particular group of people so that they assure that the school is safe and protected. So there needs to be a risk management task force in every high school, and maybe even down into the junior high and elementary school as well. So maybe it just needs to be a school system-wide task force that really takes this thing seriously and looks at all the schools in terms of the risk levels that are taking place in our school system today. Part of it has to do with the neighborhood that they're located in as a school. Part of it is what they do with some of the students, how they treat them. If they mistreat students, expel a lot of students, you know, have a history of violence in the school, there's a high level of risk for that particular school. Who's assessing it and who's doing anything about it? Who's addressing it? Who's trying to reduce the stress level and the risk level of a particular school? Well, what about the police department? Did anybody ever advise the police department that this kid was acting strange and that he was expelled from school and he could be at risk? Did anybody say, you know, just keep an eye on him? You know, see, most of these kids that shoot in schools are not criminals. They don't have a long criminal history. So police departments often don't know much about them. Or if they do, only a little bit. So what about the police? Did they know much about this guy? Did anybody ever call the police department and just say, look, keep an eye on this kid. He seems to be strange, or he makes me nervous and he makes me afraid. So let's keep an eye on him. Did anybody ever do that? Is the police department aware of that? I mean, that's a factor when you look at fault, if you will. Then there's a whole other issue, and that is the mental health system of that particular community. You know, right across our country, our adolescent kids do not get adequate treatment. Why? Because insurance companies don't pay. Don't pay for the therapy that these kids require. They often don't pay for therapy of a particular diagnosis, such as attention deficit disorder. They don't pay for that. So these kids don't often get treatment. Or there's no hospital for kids who are adolescent. There isn't any. In our particular community, there isn't. You have to go all the way across the country, some 200 miles to the closest hospital for adolescent kids. And you have to go there by ambulance. So it isn't very efficient. But what about most communities? No, they don't have hospitals for adolescent kids that they can use. So these kids don't get proper treatment. There are often a lot of therapists in our community that will treat adults, treat young children, but very few therapists want to treat adolescent kids, particularly hostile adolescent kids, particularly violent adolescent kids, at-risk adolescent kids. Many, many, many therapists will treat anybody else but them. So they get the short stick when it comes to treatment. And insurance companies often will question and will doubt and will withdraw payment or withhold payment when you see an adolescent kid. So sometimes you end up treating these adolescent kids for free. And you can do that only so long. And we don't have a mental health system that is adequate for the problems that some of these adolescent kids present. So that's one of our problems. But see, there are a number of things you have to look at when you say, okay, what's the fault of this? Why did this happen? How could it have been prevented? What could we have done to have prevented this whole thing? And what about the next time? What about the future? These are some of the issues you have to look at. We have to have a much more open system, the ability to communicate and know to whom to communicate your concerns. We need to work together, parents and teachers and administration and students. We need to look at risk factors that are taking place. I mean, there's ways to deal with this issue, but we're not doing it across the country. What about guns being carried in school? We know that if there's a gun present, there's going to be less likely of an attack on that particular school. Less likely. Maybe we ought to have a policy which allows for one school per 12 teachers. And a teacher may carry a gun. Keep it in a concealed area, keep it away from students. Students not know who has a gun, when they have it. But students could be well protected if there was the policy and the provision that allowed for guns on campus of our schools today. We're in a different world today. We live in a different world. We didn't need that kind of thinking or even the possibility of that 25 years ago. But today we're in a different world. We're in a world of violence. We're in a world of attack. We're in a world of hurt. We're in a world of anger, resentment, and bitterness, and retaliation. So we got to think that way. So guns on campus might have to just be the case. And school and states are going to have to take a look at that issue and allow that to be the case in schools if a school so desires. And the school board and the school representatives and the administration so desire. But it might be a wise thing for schools to consider having some type of system of counterattack so that when these attacks occur, somebody was there to take the kid down and stop the violence from taking place. So there's things to do. There's ways to handle this. And we need these policies in schools for things like expulsion. We need policies in schools for any time a kid is removed from school, even if it's for a couple days. We need schools to have a longer arm to extend outside the school to the community, to the home of a kid at risk, and take on some responsibility for that kid for a period of time after the expulsion takes place. So we need to rethink our responsibility as a total community and as a total school system. Okay, so again, if you want more information on this topic, on shootings in the school situation, go to my podcast, which was November 9, 2017. Just go into my archives, scroll down to November 9, 2017. You'll see a podcast there on school shootings, 20 minutes, and you can learn a lot more about the school shooting issue than I've covered even today. But I've covered some other topics related to it today. So those two topics together would be well worth looking at. If you're a teacher, if you're an administrator, if you're a school psychologist, if you're a board member, if you're chairman of a board, you know, you're a principal, you're a vice principal. These two podcasts are important for you to listen to. So if you're a parent, refer your school to these two podcasts so they get a handle on it and can get some advice. Okay, hey, nice to talk to you today. Thanks for joining me. And let me just remind you, tomorrow is Saturday. And Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning, I will be on television. It will be on internet television, centralvalleytalk.com. centralvalleytalk.com. And the television program is Dr. Teach Me to Parent. So join me tomorrow, Saturday morning, 10 o'clock, centralvalleytalk.com, under the topic of Dr. Teach Me to Parent. Join me for that particular session. It's a good one, and we'll see you then. Okay, bye for now.